Welcome to RHRealityTech.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, I'll be covering the new attempts to paint the war on women as something other than what it is in the media. And I'll give an example of how the war on women is a very real thing going on, say, in Texas. Additionally, Erin Carmone will be gracious enough to agree to come onto the show and explain the whole Tucker Max versus Planned Parenthood debacle. So, this happened.
So listen, folks, it's over. Rick Santorum, religious conservative, the Pennsylvania prude, sweater vest Johnson, the Keystone block, ended his campaign for the Republican presidential nomination in a heartfelt concession speech yesterday afternoon.
Over and over again, we were told, forget it, you can't win. We were winning. We were winning in a very different way.
In fact, you may know it as losing. Like winning, but in reverse.
I'm going to miss him. His inability to shut up about how contraception has ruined America was so clarifying. Now we're probably going to go back to conservatives constructing Byzantine, disingenuous rationalizations for their attacks on contraception that try to make it sound like they're not just out to, you know, attack contraception. As I documented last week, the war on women has finally reached a point where there's polling and possibly electoral consequences for its supporters. Rick Santorum, the most visible warrior against women, finally saw his prospects slip to the point where he had to drop out of the primary race. Mitt Romney is seeing a major drop in female support in swing states. In a panic, Republicans and conservatives are declaring that the war on women is fictional, and that the media and the Democrats made it up to undermine them. In doing so, they're basically telling women that we're crazy and that we're not allowed to see actual attacks on our rights for what they are, which is a strategy that turns out not to be as effective as they'd hope. Reince Priebus, the chair of the RNC, put his foot in his mouth on this one.
Well, for one thing, you know, if the Democrats said we had a war on caterpillars, then every mainstream media outlet talked about the fact that Republicans have a war on caterpillars, then we'd have problems with caterpillars. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a fiction, and this started as a war against the Vatican that this president pursued.
Priebus was roundly criticized for comparing women to caterpillars, even though women, unlike caterpillars, have the right to vote. He can rank the female vote alongside the caterpillar vote in terms of importance all he wants. But unlike the caterpillar vote, if you lose women, you tend to lose elections. Additionally, the claim that Obama is waging war on the Vatican by not allowing them to interfere with a woman's access to contraception is preposterous. We still have separation of church and state in this country. The Vatican is allowed to say contraception is evil all they want, but when they start trying to force their religious dogma on women is where we have a problem. That's simply not their right. Priebus was far from the only person telling women to listen to conservative pundits and not their lying eyes. The idea that it was all in our heads was expressed by Michelle Malkin.
That's absolutely right, Steve. It was contrived and manufactured from the get-go. We know that from the young woman's past political history. And as is the case with Obama and his Chicago team, it is always about the distraction. And I think the GOP, before that kerfuffle happened, of course, had been gaining a lot of ground and traction in trying to zero back in on jobs and gas prices.
By the young woman, she means Sandra Fluck. Part of this narrative is the argument that because Fluck had been a reproductive rights activist prior to testifying in front of Congress, her observations about contraception are illegitimate. No, it doesn't make much sense, but neither does this whole narrative. The problem here is that even if Democrats did bait Republicans into attacking contraception access, there was no reason that the Republicans had to take the bait. For instance, Daryl Issa was not actually obligated to have mostly men and all anti-choicers testify during his hearing on this issue. He chose to do that, even after he was asked to hear Fluck. Painting anti-choicers as helpless victims, forced, I tell you, to attack women makes no kind of sense. At all points in time, they are completely free to stop attacking women's access to contraception and abortion. They choose not to, and are arguing that they shouldn't be held accountable for that choice. That's not how politics works. There is no right to attack a large group of people's rights without being called out on it. Fox's Ducey took it to the next level, not only claiming that Democrats don't have a right to call out attacks on reproductive rights, but that those attacks are fictions.
The economy not working for the president as a campaign issue, you know, the stimulus didn't work out so well, and he's got a lot of problems. So in the last couple of months, what they have done, the Democrats, is they have invented this phony war on women. They said Republicans are against women. There's not really a war on women. There's a war for women because they would like to have as many women vote for their candidate.
You know things are getting desperate in right-wing media when they abandon all pretexts of plausible deniability and just start saying things that are blatantly, demonstrably, immediately, and obviously lies. Which means that the attention the war on women is getting is beginning to make them sweat. Which means that it's time to keep plugging and not let off. Rush Limbaugh, in his desperation, has moved from just lying and denying to the I'm rubber, you're glue strategy.
The real war on women, I'm going to go back to last Friday. The real war on women is being conducted by the regime, by the Obama administration. Since Barack Obama took office, the unemployment rate for women has gone up from 7 to 8.1%. Since Obama took office, the number of female workers has declined by 683,000. Since Obama took office, the number of women unemployed has increased by 858,000, close to a million. The poverty rate among women rose to 14.5% last year, up from 13.9% when Obama was immaculated in 2000. That's over half a percentage point in Obama's 3 years. And it happens to be the highest rate for poverty in women in 17 years. If there is a war on women, it is happening, and it is being directed from the White House with Obama as the generalissimo.
A man who mocks poor people and claims they brought it on themselves, and claims women who use birth control, aka 99% of women, are sluts, is now pretending to care about women, unemployment, and poverty. Sure, Rush. Alas, Limbaugh has all his facts wrong. Even the conservative-leaning newspaper Politico had to call BS on this claim, pointing out that the job losses were due to the economic collapse that happened on Bush's watch. Quote, "There's a simple reason why job losses look worse for women during Obama's presidency. Almost 3.3 million men were fired during George W. Bush's last year in office, while the losses for women were more drawn out over time." End quote. This kind of dishonest number tweaking might make conservatives feel better, but it doesn't change the facts. Women do see that there were over 1,000 bills introduced to restrict abortion in 2011 alone, and that there were multiple attempts to bring the federal government to a halt to take Planned Parenthood's funding, and that there have been attacks on women's basic right to have contraception treated like basic health care. That's a war on women, and no amount of hand-waving or finger-pointing is going to change that. I'd like to welcome Arin Carmon to the program. Arin is a staff writer for Salon with a sharp eye for the politics of gender. She wrote a great piece on the battle over Tucker Max trying to get a Planned Parenthood named after himself and failing. And so I've asked her to come on to explain what exactly happened. Welcome to RealityCast, Arin.
Thanks, Amanda.
So let's start with the basics. Who is Tucker Max and why did he want to donate to Planned Parenthood?
Well, Tucker Max is somebody who last year made enough money writing so-called fratire that he had a $500,000 tax liability that he was trying to get rid of. This is somebody who, you know, wrote a bunch of books about, I don't know, honestly, I haven't read any of them. They're about sluts and whores and people that he has sex with. And he has this kind of lifestyle where he just, like, gets wasted and makes fun of people. He was, I know he went to Duke Law School, and he claims that lots of women sleep with him. And he has made a lot of money on that shtick, which, you know, good for him. But basically, he threw a huge temper tantrum in the form of his surrogate publicist when he tried to specifically to burnish his image. He tried to give that $500,000 that would have gone to Texas to Planned Parenthood in Texas, which had recently been denied funding from the state of Texas, the federal funding from the state of Texas. So, you know, they wrote a piece, he wrote a piece, the publicist Ryan Holiday, saying that there was, the Planned Parenthood had turned it down once they figured out who Tucker Max was. And in their opinion, Planned Parenthood was acting just like the Susan G. Komen Foundation in stigmatizing Tucker for the source of his income.
And to get a real clear idea of, like, Tucker's writing, it's not just that he brags about sleeping with a lot of women, right? Like, people don't call him a misogynist just because he's promiscuous.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I'm not super familiar with his writing because at the time that it was really popular, I didn't have to read misogynist for a living, so I just kind of stayed clear of it. And I think that in more recent years, he's tried to reform. I mean, there was a piece about how he didn't really want to go out anymore and he wanted to do Bikram yoga in The New Yorker. But again, his brand is really synonymous with misogyny, and he showed his specific disdain for Planned Parenthood's constituency on his Twitter feed, and he wrote two tweets that specifically referenced Planned Parenthood, and one of them was, Planned Parenthood would be cooler if it was a giant flight of stairs with someone pushing girls down like a water park slide, and then he said, follow Friday, Planned Parenthood. And then the other one was, in South Florida, this place is awful, shitty design, slutty whores, and no culture, like a Planned Parenthood waiting room. So, you know, this would be reason enough for Planned Parenthood to not want to associate themselves with somebody who considers their client base, which is, I believe, 1 in 5 women have been to a Planned Parenthood in the United States, considers them, quote-unquote, slutty whores. And obviously he doesn't mean that as a compliment.
So the big criticism, I was surprised when I was sort of looking around for video clips to kind of talk about this on the podcast, because I was surprised by how many people just thought Planned Parenthood was being stupid and crazy to turn down this money. What was their reasoning, really?
I think that it's substantially reason enough to say that one of the big criticisms that people have about Planned Parenthood from the right, which is a totally insane and unwarranted one, but it still gets put out there, is that Planned Parenthood enables men to abuse women. And it insulates men from the consequences of their choices by treating women for STDs and providing abortions and contraception. So, I mean, you and I both know that just because somebody has a baby doesn't turn them into a less abusive or more responsible individual. But that's definitely a narrative that exists. That was exactly the narrative with James O'Keefe when he, with his thing with Lila Rose, which was all about trafficking and abusive women. They believe that Planned Parenthood somehow enables that sort of behavior completely baselessly in a way that makes women into these sort of pawns and victims that have no autonomy over their own reproductive decisions. So that alone would have been really a problem. And Planned Parenthood also, one of the reasons that Planned Parenthood is so effective is that it has the ear of mainstream politicians. It gets a ton of federal funding through Title X. And Planned Parenthood is a lobbyist that, you know, the Democrats at least listen to. And their respectability is crucial in terms of them being effective and getting the resources and the political capital that they need. So that also, just generally speaking, something that would really tarnish their brand. And also, I mean, Tucker's intention was so manifestly to use Planned Parenthood's brand to burnish his own. I mean, that's what they said. It was getting him press for his book. So what he wanted was those so-called slutty whores to have to undergo an additional humiliation, which is walking into a Planned Parenthood that is called like the Tucker W. Max Clinic of South Texas.
In your article on the subject, you did something which I think almost nobody else got to do, which was talk to Max personally about all this. And at the time, it seemed like it kind of complicated your view of the situation. Why was that?
Well, I mean, I think that it was sort of a situation of the enemy of my enemy and the sort of more immediate concern. I mean, Tucker is pro-choice. He's libertarian. I certainly think he's a creepy, terrible guy. As of my last exchanges with him, I think he's a not very smart guy. The way in which he expressed himself was reminded me a little bit of being a freshman in college. But I would say that the reason that I was more likely to be somewhat tolerant of him and suggest instead that he donated anonymously if he wanted to show good faith interest in helping the clients of Planned Parenthood is because when he wrote about this woman who was in the Duke, sort of the other Duke sex scandal, who was referred to as the female Tucker Max, who was somebody that I had interviewed, he sort of at least saw her as a human being, and he wrote about it in a way that I thought was sort of perversely compassionate. And it was at this moment where everybody was sort of wringing their hands about how women were ruining their own lives by having unattached sex. And, you know, there are lots of things about Tucker that are disgusting and racist and so on, but we did actually have a civil conversation, mostly because I felt like, well, maybe if we have this conversation that is on some level of common ground, then, you know, and I'm not saying that anyone could ever be convinced, and it's a very lucrative thing for him to be, but I guess I just thought, like, you can at least have a conversation with this person, and maybe you can kind of talk to them about things that they do wrong. But the ways in which he responded to the criticism of the Planned Parenthood thing really disabused me of that notion, because he sent me a bunch of crazy emails over the course of an evening after my piece came out, and they were all like, you don't understand how complicated the world is. And I was like, what are you even arguing about? He was like, you're making an ideological argument. And I said, and I maintain this, it is a very practical argument to make, to say that it would be at the expense of Planned Parenthood in the long term and to the benefit of Tucker Max in the short term. So to argue that this self-aggrandizing stunt would be good for Planned Parenthood and that instead clinics are going to close is just not a practical argument. Regardless of what you think of Tucker Max's work, this is how it's received.
And do you think, like, let's just sort of, like, project this a bit in the future. Do you think if they actually caved and took the money and named a clinic in South Texas after him, do you think that there's any chance in hell that state conservatives wouldn't immediately seize upon that?
I think there's zero chance. I think that there would probably be, like, a congressional resolution about how Planned Parenthood. I mean, just the last 24 hours have shown you, I mean, all it takes for Republicans to suddenly claim that they're feminists is somebody saying something with, you know, unfortunate wording. So, you know, the Bill Maher was turned into an issue. Planned Parenthood is a Democratic surrogate. In a campaign year, these things are even more heightened. I just think it would be disastrous if Planned Parenthood were to name a clinic after Tucker Max.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. My guest today has been Erin Carmone. You can follow her marvelous writing at salon.com, where she did, in fact, have another great article about the unfortunate wording incident. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Erin.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
While the national media tries to make a big deal out of who said what about which housewife, real issues affecting women continue to churn on. In Texas particularly, the war over contraception continues to be fought like crazy. Because Governor Perry and the legislature refused to allow Planned Parenthood to access state and federal funds to provide contraception to Texas women, Planned Parenthood is fighting back. Cecile Richards recorded an ad that explains the basic gist of the problem.
The latest attack on women's health really hits home for me because it's happening in my home state of Texas. Governor Rick Perry has moved to end the state's entire Medicaid women's health program, which provides 130,000 women with basic health care. This comes hard on the heels of devastating cuts to women's health funding across the board, cuts that are already expected to leave 160,000 women in Texas without care this year.
Planned Parenthood sent a bus across the state to gin up outrage over this, which I'm sure was helpful, but alas, it's not going to be enough. Perry's base loves the idea that they're pissing off the feminists, and so angry letters from feminists might just encourage them. And so onward to the way these kinds of disputes are generally resolved. A good old-fashioned lawsuit.
And once again, Loriana, if everything goes as planned, well, that law will go into effect on May 1st. And Planned Parenthood says, well, this is a very bad thing, because if that happens, more than 130,000 Texas women will go without benefits unless that federal judge rules otherwise.
The advantage of hashing it out in court is that if Planned Parenthood wins, they will start getting their funding back rapidly and hopefully won't be forced to close their doors. This is a very serious concern, and not just because we love Planned Parenthood here on RealityCast. The fact of the matter is that Planned Parenthood is often women's only source of decent medical care at all, much less contraceptive care. This is especially true in a state like Texas, which has a lot of poverty and where a lot of religious busybodies amplify women's need for discreet health care. The news station interviewed Planned Parenthood's lawyer about the claims in the case.
The new rule is unconstitutional under the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. That law is clear that the government cannot deny Planned Parenthood or anyone else, health centers, funding for non-abortion services simply because they are affiliated with Planned Parenthood Federation of America.
With all this going on, new numbers came out from the CDC showing that increased contraception use has caused the United States to have its lowest teen pregnancy rate basically ever. Slashing funds for contraception is not just mean-spirited and sex-phobic, it's plain stupid. The very people, such as teenagers, who most need this help are often the only ones who are facing the worst consequences if they don't get it. But in Texas, apparently, punishing women for being sexually active is more important than basic public health. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Limbaugh Can't Help Himself edition. While right-wing pundits and politicians are scrambling to cover up and claim there never was any war on women, what are you talking about? Limbaugh continues to wage it gleefully and openly.
Claire McCaskill, a senatorette from my home state of Missouri.
He can't call a senator because she's female. That's how bad this has gotten. But there's no war on women.
That's it for this week's edition of RealityCast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.